Now, I want to start this Bible study by asking a question, and that is, if in the home you live, a child was born, and after several years, you notice that the child has remained pretty much at the same stage as when he or she was born. 5 years, 6 years old, but you still have to lift up the child, you still have to change clothing, you know. The child is still doing all those basic things that he or she should be doing for himself. The child is not walking. Would you be concerned?
Yes.
Of course. We all would be concerned. What are some of the things you would try to do? What would you? What are some things that come to mind? What would you say?
Go to the experts.
Go to the experts. This child has to go to the doctor. No, this is not right. This is not how it should be. I know what it means for one to be a baby, and I know what it is for one to be growing. So we will be concerned. Do you know that that is how the Bible portrays an individual who has come to know Christ? In fact, the Bible refers to that as a newborn babe. And then it says we must desire the sincere milk of the word, because you need the milk to grow. But afterwards, the scripture would say, by now, you should not be on milk. You should be having more mature food. You know, our eyes, because we are physical beings, we are not able to see spiritual things in the way we ought. Maybe if we could, life would be different. Maybe we would take more seriously this point that we are making this morning. Because we could say, oh my goodness, something is wrong. Something has to be done. This can't be. And that is really where our Bible study is, and where we would like to begin over a period of time, a series of studies, sermons, presentations by the number of speakers on growing as a child of God. Christian growth. Christian development and maturity. That is such an important aspect of our being as a Christian. And what we would like at the end of it all is that all of us could come to a much better appreciation of the need to grow. In fact, that we would look at ourselves. You know, we have a way to look at ourselves in the mirror to see how we are doing. We may not be saying that to ourselves, but we're looking at ourselves. And we're saying, you know, and sometimes it flashes in our mind, oh my goodness, you know, I remember when I was 5, now I'm 10, now I'm 20. And we're looking at ourselves as we grow up, and we want to see a difference. We don't want to see ourselves looking the same way. We want to see ourselves looking differently as we grow up. And what I want us to do today in looking at that series is to look at what is the most fundamental of all the foods that we should be taking in order to grow. What really is the milk that we should be growing on in order that we can become mature? If you turn with me to Matthew chapter 22 and we start in verse 36. A question was asked of Jesus, and someone said to him, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" Now, we are a church that believe and teach that God's law is not abolished. So, the question now is being asked, because since you observe your law, and you believe in God's Sabbath, and you believe in all these holy days, and you believe in all the Ten Commandments, and all these things, what is the greatest? Which is the greatest commandment in the law? He was asking. And Jesus gave an answer. And this is what he said. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind. What does that mean? Is there anything about us that is left out? This is all of us. This is everything about us. All of our mind, all of our being, our soul, all of our heart. And then he said the second. So here's the second greatest. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And everything else that we do, because some people take this to say, oh, I don't need to keep God's commandments. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, look, that's the foundation. That love is a foundation. And everything else, he says, on this hangs the whole law and the prophets. Everything else. Because at that time, the only thing they had was what we call the Old Testament.
No matter what you read in Genesis, Exodus, in Nehemiah, in Ezra, in Malachi, in Jeremiah, no matter what you read,
all of that is based on this. All of what you and I are seeking to do as Christians is hung on one fundamental, and that is love. Love for God, love for each other. And so important it is. Let me just take you to John 13 and verse 35. So important is this subject that we are talking about. That here is how John describes it. Verse 35 of John 13. This is how all men will know you are my disciples. This is how all men. Now this means people out of the church and in the church. Everybody. If you show love onward toward one another. So, when a person wants to know if you are really a child of God, the symbol that God looks for, and the symbol he says other people must look for, is the way in which you show love towards one another. Now, I'm not going to get into the detail of it. But some again, and I have to speak on both sides of the coin, because we have to be balanced here. Some look at this and say, oh, that's all I need. Therefore, you know, I love you, brother, I love you, sister. Not understanding other aspects of the Bible, which says, this is how you show love. You show love by towards God, by keeping his commandments that show love for God. The first four of the commandments. You show love for man by the other six that are written there. The Bible makes that clear. So this is not speaking about, you know, love which is just feelings and emotions.
is speaking about things that God says we must do, which demonstrates love to Him and to our neighbors. And then, if you look at John 4 and I think it's First John 4 and verse 8. This is now very damning, because what it's saying here is that the one who does not love does not know God. For God is love. The one who does not love does not know God. So when we are not portraying the love of God to each other, it is an indication that, look, you may think that you're not showing love towards me and it's because you have this or that against me. But you know what you're really saying? You're saying you don't know God. That's really what you're saying. You may think it makes you look good that you're standing up for yourself and you are showing that you are a person who you don't allow anyone to offend you, and showing your strength and your power. But you know really what you're showing? You're really showing that you don't love God. That's really what it is saying. So the topic we are talking about here then is a very important for us to look at. And so what I want us to do in this study is to look at the characteristics of love. How does the Bible portray love? Paul does that very well in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians 13. And we are now going to look at verses 4 to 7. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 to 7. And he's going to help us now to understand practically the outworking of love. Okay? Because many people believe that love is just this warm feeling. Oh, I love you. Oh, you don't know how much I love you. I love you so much. That's good. It's good to feel that way. Good. But seeing is believing. And it is by their fruit you shall know them. So there's a way in which you can betray what you're saying. Because if I'm saying, I love you, you don't know, I can't sleep because of how much I just think about you. Okay. Well, let us see in a very practical way how that works. So in verse 4 of 1 Corinthians 13, Paul begins to describe the characteristics of love. Here are the characteristics. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Wow. Okay. So these are a lot of characteristics here. Lots of things. And what I want us to do here, I took each of these characteristics and
I have them on a piece of paper. And I'm going to go around. There are 15 of them here. So if there are 15, okay, I think it's enough. If it's not quite enough, we can share. But I'm going to ask if you can just choose one. Just start here, please. Just take one. Yeah, just take one. Take one, please, Mom. Tiffany, just take one. Okay. Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you. Good. And if it run out, I write down some more. Okay. So what we have there now, I placed a number on your paper, so I'm going to take them in order of the numbers, right? To make it easy. So, who has number one? You have number one, and you are number one, you know. You're right in front. No, look at that. That's nice. What is on your sheet? What does it say?
Love is patient.
Love is patient. What do you understand by that?
When you have love and there's someone comes to you seeking your help or something.
Yes.
You have to have patience on that person.
You have patience.
And that person can go as fast as he can do.
Yes. Yes.
Whatever.
Yes. Yes. And really, nowadays, we find that that's a problem many of us have. Patience. We don't have patience on it. So, do you believe that a Christian who is growing and is maturing must manifest, must demonstrate patience? You think so? What would you say to a person who you saw was kind of just, you know, impatient, you know?
Talk to them and tell them they must be calm, be patient.
Be calm.
And you know, because God made a patient for us, so
yes,
we have to
and
show that
love. And what would you say
to
benefit? How do I benefit from that? Because the reason I'm not patient, because I need it to know, and I can't wait. So don't bother telling me about that.
You have to keep calming that person down and say, just be patient, man. Just wait.
Yes.
Wait a little longer and hold on.
But how is it going to help me?
I don't know either, but you know, to keep encouraging that person.
Okay, all right. Let me just ask. Anybody else want to say, how would it help you? How would it help? Yes, go ahead. Anybody wants to? How would it help you? Let the person ask me, how will it help me? Because what I want it now. Yes, the hand is up there. There's a hand. The hand is right in the back there.
It would help you in that you'll find in life that, you know, life is full of ups and downs.
Yes.
And you'll find yourself at times when you need somebody else to be patient with you.
Yes.
So by learning to exercise patience in dealing with other persons, it makes you better equipped so that when your time comes around, when you find yourself in a position where you need somebody to exercise the patience in waiting with you, because, you know, really moving in line, then you can say, you know, you can expect that people will be patient with you too.
Yes.
So it will help you.
Very, very good. And of course, patience is a virtue that helps you to think through. People who are not patient are likely to be very, they get stressed. They find themselves, you know, not being able to think through things before they do them, right? Hastily and run the problem. Yes, Sister Marie.
I have the points that have been made already.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that from personal experience, and I speak this one because I think you can understand this because it's fairly public. I think for us, for example, Ken and myself, being married for so long and not having any children.
Yes.
We have to if we were not patient.
Yes.
Or maybe it's partially trusting too, we could get very, very, very frustrated.
Yes.
Very miserable if we insist on our own way.
Yes.
So I think we need to recognize that there is a sovereign God.
Yes.
With a plan. Yes. For our lives. And if,
yes.
if we don't have patience.
Yes.
Then we'll miss that it's not about what we can see.
Yes.
And what we have plans for and our goals. It's about what God has planned for us.
That's right. And so the scriptures say, wait upon the Lord and he will renew your strength. Wait, I say, upon the Lord. Wait upon him, because ultimately, if we, as Christians, we want to know that what we are doing is in the will of God. So a good question to ask is, well, what is God's will in this? Because what I want to do is to please God. Yes?
Another point. In this book here called Love Dare, that's based on the movie Fireproof, and it says, underneath patience, it is a choice to control your emotions. Patience doesn't rush to judgment, but listens to what the other person is saying.
Yes.
And it goes to Proverbs 14:29.
That's what Sister Cousin was saying.
He who is slow to anger has great understanding, and he who is hasty in spirit exalts folly.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you know, what we need to do is to personally examine ourselves. It's one thing to talk about it. Am I a patient person? How many persons have had to say to me, listen to me, I mean, you're just not patient, can't you wait? Or you might have seen it to yourself to say, boy, I just find that, you know, as I hear the thing, I want it now. When indeed, that's probably, well, that's not the way the scriptures want us to do it. Okay? All right, good. Let's number two. Who is number two? Number two is over here. Read it for me. What is number two saying?
Love is kind.
Love is kind. What do you understand by that?
Okay, from the same book, when it talked about patience, love is built on two.
By the way, I didn't tell you to bring that book.
Yeah, I know. No, you didn't. No.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's just my question. I always carry it with me.
Okay.
Love is built on two pillars: patience, which is long suffering, and kindness. And in the Love is Kind, it states, patience reacts to minimize a negative circumstance. Kindness acts to maximize a positive circumstance. Patience avoids a problem. Kindness creates a blessing. And that's how I see it.
So in practical life now, explain to me an example. How do you recognize a person who you say, that person is kind?
This fuse is very long, very patient, and it demonstrates kindness in the face of adversity. So, for example,
yes, right. Give
a husband and a wife, if they're having a conflict, one will cow down to the other one if they're having a rough day. They're patient, they realize they're a human being, and you show kindness that, hey, they're having a rough day, and
yes,
you give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yes. And our growing concern for others, isn't it?
Yep.
Where you are really empathizing and you are almost experiencing what the person is going through and making the effort at your own expense,
yeah,
at your own sacrifice, right, for the other person's good, the other person's benefit.
And the only way you can go through that is if you experienced or walked in there a mile in their shoes.
So you see, particularly among God's people, if that kind of, so when they say by this, when the scripture says by this all men will know you are my disciples, if you show love one toward another, this is a breakout of that. It's not just love, the good feeling. It is these things. It's the patience. It's the kindness. And the way it is demonstrated practically. And what we need to do is to go out of our way individually to show those things, to do those things, so that others can see it. And that is how, when we sing the song, let others see Jesus in you. That's how you see Jesus in a person. when these things are being done. I'm going to move on to number three, but very quickly.
Yeah, just quickly. There's certain characteristics of the word kindness. It means gentleness, helpfulness, and in Strong's it means usefulness.
Yes.
A willingness, and then there's a personal initiative behind it.
Yes. So a person who is kind, you know, the nature of that person towards others, it is one in which the person, even though they may have reason to be offended, you know, but they are gentle, as you said, they are tender towards the person, they are affectionate, they try to show these, they're not harsh. You know, there's some persons who they're very harsh. You know, just the words that come out of their mouth. Just the way in which they would say, you know, to someone else, as though, well, you know, really, you know, it makes a person feel worse than they were feeling. The comments you make about the person, you know, those things are not really showing the kindness that we ought to show to one another. Number three. Who has number three? Yes, go right ahead, Wilkin.
Love does not envy. When I think about that, when it says love does not envy, it means that you are not jealous of what other people have. In other words, yeah, there's a certain room for jealousy, because Paul talks about, you know, and God talks about, I'm jealous over you with a godly jealousy.
Yes.
So there's a good part to wanting to, if you see a good quality in somebody,
yes,
you'd want to have that too.
Yes.
But the envy, when it says does not envy, the envious person,
yes,
they not just want what you have, they don't want you to have anything. So to me, that's what I see as envy.
Yes.
If we have an envious spirit, you, yes, see somebody with something you don't, yes, want them to have. You want to get, like,
yes,
they have a nice car.
Yes.
Oh, he shouldn't have that car.
Exactly.
I want that car.
Yes.
You know, that's the envious thing.
Yes.
And it's the,
yes,
kind of thing that would make you very miserable.
Yes.
It makes for a very miserable life, because,
absolutely,
you always see people having things,
yes,
that you're desirous of. And it makes you miserable, because you have no peace when you see other people. Because,
yeah,
people are always having things and you always want to have it and not want to see them prosper.
And you know where that comes from? It comes from pride.
Yeah.
It comes from, I don't want anybody to be better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And because the person has those things that you are jealous of and envious of, you are saying, you know, I mean, you look better than me. You know, you make me look small by your gifts,
mm-hmm,
your talents, your abilities, your possessions, whatever it is that you have. And therefore, it is something we... And you know, it is kind of a human nature thing in a sense, you know. And we have to be able to be conscious of it and to control and to delete. Because what happens is, we may say to ourselves, boy, what's wrong with me? Why I can't have these things? And where the person has, and then you would probably, oh, you know what? Maybe it's steal it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you begin to say wrong things about the person. All because you don't have, and the person has. You know? So, well, it's not because I didn't go to school, you know. But it's just that some people, you know, and you're going to make ill remarks. Rather than giving praise, rather than saying to the person, it is good. Because, now, how does that affect us when we are envious towards others? When we, yes?
Even outside of the church, usually crimes that people commit.
Put the mic a little closer.
Crimes that people commit. They see someone with something.
Yes.
And even though they would not get it if they murder the person, but they would, because they don't want you to have it.
Yes.
So I would say envy is an evil.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. So we have to, let me allow someone else. Yes? Okay. Brother Rodolfo.
Where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. That's in James 3 or 4.
Okay. Where envy is, there comes strife and there comes confusion, and that is also very very clear result what happens when envy reigns. Proverbs 14:30 says this: envy is the rottenness of the bones. And it says, those who practice in Galatians 5, those who practice such things shall not inherit God's kingdom. You know, so these, yes, please go ahead.
I think envy comes from looking around you and comparing yourself with another person.
Yes.
And I think we are told in the scriptures, don't compare yourselves among yourselves because it's not wise.
Yes.
It's best to look up.
Right.
Look up and compare ourselves with Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Then you can live to your full potential.
Yes.
Because you could be, like if we look at the body, you could be an ear.
Yes.
And you're comparing yourself to a teeth.
Yes.
Or you could be an eye and you're comparing yourself to a hand.
Yes.
And so it's really dumb to be comparing ourselves among ourselves, because we're different parts, we have different roles to play, and we're not going to be able to fill our role if we're busy looking at what somebody else is doing.
So what this Marie is saying there is that, do you know that you also have some things that others may not have? And therefore, why don't we develop the attitude of counting our blessings and acknowledging and recognizing the things we have, and understand that we cannot have everything, and therefore what we do is to use what we have to complement what others have so that everyone can grow. Okay? Yes, there is.
Say this, that there are some times when someone envies you, sorry, they will draw a conclusion about you that really is not there.
Yes.
But that's what they're seeing.
Yes.
You know, because of what they're seeing. Let's
Yes. Understood. Okay, let's move on. Thank you. We are on number 4. Wow, it looks like this is going to be another session, eh? We're going to have, yes, go ahead, number 4. We're not going to rush it through.
That one. Love does not boast.
Love doesn't boast. What does that mean?
Well, what it comes to me, for the person who does not boast, and I think it starts, you need a certain mindset.
Yes.
And the mindset is that you know that you are dependent upon God. I say that because when you get up in the morning, we are dependent upon the sun shining. We are dependent upon having air to breathe. When you realize that and realize you can't sustain yourself, you know that you are dependent upon God. So you have to realize that first. So of yourself, you can do nothing.
Yes.
So that has to set the foundation of your entire mindset through life. When you go through life, you know that, first of all, I can do what gives me the possibility to do anything and anything is because of the grace of God. You have to realize that. And that sets a foundation for you having a humble attitude throughout life. In anything that you undertake.
The apostle Paul would say, I boast in the Lord.
Yes.
That's where my boast is.
Right. And if you want to boast, you boast in the Lord. Yes. My God is a great God.
Yes.
He's
not
the
about
only
me.
God. Not about,
about God.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Boasting. You know, we may have reasons why things are going well for us. We may have reasons why we are brilliant, or we are gifted, or many things, you know. And we can be boasting about the various gifts that we have. First of all, where do you get it from? You think you got it by yourself? What about you think? What you should be doing is, rather than being boastful, is being thankful. That's it. Being thankful. Because this is a gift that you have. And you know why it is given to you? The scriptures say that these are given to us for the common good. It's given to you not for you. You are a vessel for blessing others with your gift. And you are sitting down there boasting?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you something. Do you know what God gives? The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh. So be careful. Stop the boast. Stop the boast. You have nothing to boast about. Okay. You have everything to be thankful about.
Okay.
Praise God.
Yeah. Yes. So now, There are some times when you're given gifts from the Lord.
Yes.
Let's say the Lord gave you this and you're boasting in the Lord.
Yes.
Some people will envy you for that boasting in the Lord.
Yes.
Okay, because sometimes people said, oh, you're going on as if you're the only person God can give his spirit. Or you're the only person that's so righteous. And so you're trying to obey your God and to fear him. And, you know, you're not perfect.
No, you have a point. But here's what happens with that. What happens is that how we do what we do matters a lot. And we can be vaunting. In other words, we're trying to say it's God, you know, but really what we have done deep in this is about ourselves, right? And it's coming across, because what you're doing is, you're kind of putting me down by saying that, yes, you're referring to God, as against when you are saying, you know, I don't know, I see myself deserving of nothing, there's nothing that I have done to deserve this, but God has been gracious to me. To give me this. And you know what? I'm going to use it for the glory of God. I'm going to use it for the glory of others, because that's really where it's at. You know?
Pastor,
so, No. I'm taking your point, but I'm only saying your point is right.
No.
Except that that person who is doing it may be doing it in a manner that comes across to the people around that, you know, they are really, you know, Pastor, pushing it.
Pastor Ramington,
yes.
There are some people who, you know, this is church, but we have to be real.
Okay, let's
go. There are some people who would sit down and let's say they're lazy, they're not doing anything for others, even though the need is there.
Say it again, please.
I said, there are some people, they won't do anything for others, even though the need is there.
And they have the gift to
and,
do it.
Yeah, well, gift or no gift. And if God raised up someone among you or some people, and these people, you know, go out and help others, the person who's sitting there not doing anything will say, oh,
okay,
they're just showing.
You're right. There are some who they themselves may not want to stand up and offer, but if you do, they will say you're showing up yourself. Okay? And what you're saying is that person, rather than being encouraged to say, you know what, I can use my gifts too. I should use my gift. They are looking at it negatively. I understand that. And that is something that we can talk about, because we have to help people who have gifts and are not utilizing it or may not recognize their gifts. And therefore, they are feeling a bit, you know, a bit laid back. But the idea really of us, you know, being puffing up ourselves, so to speak, you know, against others is just not the way. And we just have to talk about it. Yes? Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to do a little shifting. I'm getting good contributions from here, and it seems I'm starving. I'm starving here, so I'm going to ask you to veer yourself this way now, Brother Noel, as we go. So who has number five?
I do. Love is not proud. How I see that is, say for instance, you know, people like to say, oh, I love this person, I love that person. But love doesn't mean by you saying it. It's in your action and what you do. It's how you come across to that individual person. Could be a child, could be a stranger. It could be anybody that you come across to. It's how you, your action, your reflection to that person that will show that you're not saying your love is proud. You're not bragging, you're not boasting, you're being humble as an individual self.
Right. So to say love is not proud, it means love is humility. Love
yes.
is humble.
Yes.
Yes.
You're
yes.
humble.
Yes.
Like
yes.
the word says, to be
yes.
humble.
Anyone else would like to make a contribution on that? Come up front here. We get a little. Yeah. Just feel free to talk. Just say what maybe anyone here would like to. Love is not proud. We are talking about the need for humility. Is there an example of how you can demonstrate love through humility? and you know, suppressing pride that you can think about. What would you say to someone who you think is a brother, is a sister, and you know the pride that he or she may be showing is not in their best interest? Is there anything you could say to them, you think? Any suggestion? Okay, keep on being proud. Keep on being proud.
Not to be so, because it's like, in a sense, boastful in a sense, right? And when you're boastful in that sense, you'll tell a person, if you're reflecting when it's coming to the word, you said, God doesn't like a person like that. God like a person that, even if the person's not showing you love, it's okay. Still show that person love. Wait upon him, because when he's ready to reward you, you will see it.
So you can do it by example.
Yes. So live by example.
Exemplify it for
us. Yes. So you know, like how you have siblings, brothers and sisters. Oh, you do this for me. You do that for me. Mm-hmm. Don't look at it like that. Just look at it as this. That's your time.
Yes.
I'll get my blessing.
Yes.
When the time is right.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I saw a hand here.
Two examples in the Bible that come to my mind, and they're both women. One is Abigail in dealing with King David, and the other one is Queen Esther in dealing with Xerxes. They're both humble, they're not proud, but they fulfilled their positions and their duties.
Yes, behind.
For mothers not proud, it all depends on how the next person is looking at it.
Okay.
There's sometimes that someone will look at someone else, because not everyone is made equally.
Yes.
God said, I make you equally men, whatever. But there are some people that have strength. For instance, in the scriptures where King David,
yes,
and King David is a courageous person and strong person and whatever, yes, everybody else would look at King David and say, oh, he's not humble.
Yes.
And I would think King David was humble.
All right, good. So we take that point. So when is a person proud? Let's talk about that. No, so give me an example, yes, of when a person is proud.
If
let's talk about
proud
pride.
And you're going, yes, around and you're blowing your own horn and, yes, you're going, oh, I'm this, I'm that, I'm whatever.
Yes.
Then you're proud.
Yes.
Right? And yes, someone who's proud, you know, they will maybe talk a lot about themselves and,
yes,
all that.
Yes.
And regardless what, mm-hmm, another person is doing, they will say, oh, I can do better.
Yes.
Sort of. Yes. Right? But sometimes, I'm telling you, it's, yes, how the next,
yes,
person,
yes,
is looking at it.
Yes, yes.
Because sometimes somebody doesn't have to know you. They just know you superficially to draw conclusions.
Right. So there is there's someone behind you, and you would like to say something.
Is there anyone else that needs to speak? Anybody else? Okay.
Yes. Yes. Please, just indicate by your hand when you're,
yeah,
anyone who's ready to speak.
I think that pride is multifaceted.
Yes.
In the sense that there's one hand where person can seem to be prideful, but in actual fact, they're just being themselves.
Yes.
And to God, so I think we should, first of all, to your point, Sister Rose, I think we need to take our eyes off of people and whatever they want to think. We cannot control what other people think. We can only control what we think. And I think when it comes to our own growth and maturity, if we keep basing everything on what someone else think, it could send you to the asylum.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
So there is such a thing as false accusation, right?
Yes.
Where you can accuse a person wrongly of being proud.
Yes.
But there is such a thing
as pride.
Right, as someone being
and
proud.
Go ahead.
Some extent is, you know, people who over emphasize who they are. There's nothing wrong in telling persons who you are. And the purpose for telling them is also important. If I'm telling you who I am because I want you to know I am better than you, that is totally out. If I'm telling you of who I am because it can be of some help, it's quite a different matter. Or if it is relevant to say it.
But for a person to just be saying, you know who I am? People like to ask a question, oh, you don't know who I am. Who, you know who I am? Yeah, who are you? You know? Yes. So there is that. So what we're trying to do is to get to that point where, and one of the things I'd really like to get to is, how do we help someone who may have a particular way that, you know, whether it is pride or so, that might be someone. Go ahead.
Going back to your question, how do we know someone is proud? One, yes, of the indications of pride is that pride prevents one from admitting that they made a mistake or they did something wrong. Because, you know what, there's this fear that you'd be seen as less in the eyes of,
that's right,
someone or something. It's, there's that's a fear point of, you would find an excuse to say, well, you know what, it wasn't my fault because of this or whatever. But yeah.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Very good. Let's move on to the next one. So, okay. Next number?
Six.
Yes. Tiffany?
Love does not dishonor.
You can just speak it aloud.
Love does not dishonor others.
Love does not dishonor others. What do you understand by that, Tiffany?
That love esteems other persons higher than themselves.
Wow. The very opposite of it. You're spot on. In other words, rather than dishonoring, you are esteeming others. And the Bible says that. It says we must esteem others above ourselves. And so in that way, we continue to do that and we show love in that way. Isn't that wonderful? Thank you. Anyone would like to add to that point? That's a good point.
Nothing to add.
Nothing to add. Whoa. You heard that? That is good. You're spot on. Esteeming others rather than dishonoring others. Let's go on to number seven. Who's number seven? Oh, number seven.
You know, Brother George, can I just say, you know what she just said? I think it covers a lot of things that we spoke about before.
Yes.
Because if you're esteeming others better than yourself, it's very hard to be proud.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's really, really, and you will be kind because,
yes,
if they have a,
yes,
need and you see it.
Yes.
And you will not be boasting, yes, because, yes, you'll be so busy and, yes, esteeming, yes, other people. Yes. So I think that point, yes, covers a lot of things.
So it's almost organic, yes, where one thing seems to, yes, support the other. Very good. Very good. Let's take number eight in the meantime. No, seven is stepped out for a minute. Eight. Yes.
Love is not easily angered.
A little louder, please.
Love is not easily angered.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you understand by that?
I understand that if you love, you would have some patience.
Ah, it comes back into patience. Ah, you see what I mean?
I say some, eh?
Yes. Yes. Not easily angered. Yes.
The reason why I say some, because, yes, you can be angry and, yes, say not.
Yes.
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 You know.
Yes.
And there are sometimes you can have situation where you have to be really, you're hungry about it, but it's not that it's getting to your being to make you sin.
Yes.
Okay? But love is not easily angered. Easily is the word.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So meaning that it could go to the extreme.
Yes.
Where maybe you could be angry.
Yes.
But easily meaning everything you, yes, get angry about.
And what it also says there is a bit of self-control.
Control, you know? That's, yes, right.
You know, it's not that you didn't have a cause.
Yeah.
But the fact that someone has angered you, mm-hmm, how you respond matters.
That's right.
And that's what we have to know. Because someone may say, but he did it first.
Yeah.
Or she did it first. I didn't start it.
Exactly.
Those are some of the excuses that are made.
Kids.
But okay, I understand that. You did not start it. That's true. He's wrong and so on. But
you finish it.
To what extent were you demonstrating the control, mm-hmm, you know, that you should have?
Patience. That is very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good point.
And he said, I saw answer, turn it away, rot. So if someone is angry to you, don't get angry. Two wrong can make one right.
So you can help the situation by not responding in kind, right? You can temper the thing by having a softer approach. Excellent. Thanks for that response. Okay, number 7. Yes.
Love is not self-seeking.
All right, just use that so you can.
Yeah. Love is not self-seeking.
Love is not self-seeking. Yes. So, what do you understand from that?
So my understanding is that love is not always putting yourself before others. Love is putting the interests of others
above yourself. It comes back to the point about esteeming others above yourself. And it is not self-seeking. It means that, you know, when I begin, everything is about me. Everything is about how do I benefit. Everything is about, you know, what's in it for me. Those kinds of questions. It comes back to charity.
In some way, too, you kind of go back to what the envy. If you're going to address a situation, first analyze it, how you would be affected by your delivery, so that other people would be greatly offended. Then you have to somehow modify how you express yourself so that other people are not affected by what you're saying.
You know what we are learning in going through these characteristics and these gifts? We are learning that one emboldens the other. That you are on a progressive path once you begin. So sometimes you may not be able to attend to everything at once because I may have a lot of things about me that needs to be attended to. But if we begin, you'll automatically see that one helps you to better deal with the other. And so it is important that wherever we find ourselves weakest in these characteristics, that we are going to actually go ahead and, you know, make the move to work on it. Because if we begin to work on that one, you can be sure it is leading you towards working on others. And that is a very, very good thing. Okay? We're going to take the next one, but you have something very
quick. In Philippians 2:3, it says, do nothing from selfish ambition or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself.
Very good. Very good. Well, that sums
number
it up. 9.
So, I have number 9. Yeah. Love keeps no record of wrongs.
Love keeps no record of wrongs. What is that?
Yeah, so for me, I think of the spirit of reconciliation.
Yes.
And true forgiveness. Yes. When you love someone, you don't hold on to any baggage. You just truly forgive and let go. Mm. Christ was the perfect example of that when he was being crucified and, yes, you know, when he was praying to the Father. Mm. And he said, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Yeah.
Also, I believe in the Psalms, I believe David made reference, I can't remember exactly what he says, something to the effect of, Lord, if you keep record of our sins, who could stand? Something
That's
along
right.
those lines.
That's right.
This is one that's easier said than done. It's very difficult. And it's actually interesting that I'm the one that got this one, because my wife and I, we were actually discussing this very thing last night. Usually on Friday nights we have our little quality time, and we'll discuss certain things in life.
Yes.
And we were discussing, it's actually one of the areas that both of us need to improve in.
Yes.
In terms of just letting go of certain things in the past.
Yes. Yes.
And as I said, it's difficult. It's a very difficult thing.
Yes, it is.
Especially in a marriage and any kind of relationship.
Yes.
Just truly letting go and not holding on to any baggage or any resentment. But it's the ultimate, and it's something Christ, as I mentioned, a perfect example. So that's the example we must follow.
Very good. Thank you. And so each one of us has can talk about how we have been wronged and, you know, and how it is continuing to hurt. Isn't that true? I think we all can identify with that. And what we have to do is to come to the point to say, what it is that, you know, maybe I'm continuing to hold on to that was done to me by someone else that, you know, based on God's word, I should really be able to let go of it. And maybe that's an important point to come to, that it can help us to grow. Because I tell you something, just as Jesus said, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. In other words, God forgives us to the extent that we are forgiving to others. On many occasions, the things that stand in our way are the things we are holding on to. And if we can let go of them, if we can let go of the hurt, if we can let go of the hate, if we can let go of the unforgiveness and the various other things, gradually we'll find, oh, things are working for us. Things are happening for me. So we are our own worst enemies in many, many cases. And we are blaming others for problems when, you know what, we need to blame ourselves. Why? If we really inspect ourselves, we are blocking God's blessings from flowing. And we need to do that. And we just want to be a church where people can see these characteristics in every one of us and say, come, by this all men will know you are my disciples. Wow! I'm seeing all of that, the patience, I'm seeing the love, I'm seeing all the various things we're talking about here, just flowing out from persons. Number 10. Yes, Sister.
I don't have number 10, I just wanted to comment.
Oh, yes, please. Please go right ahead.
Sorry?
Comment from the left side.
referring to number 10 it was?
Number nine.
You know, when I'm faced with, we all are faced with at one time or the other, I always reference 2 Corinthians 10, verses 5.
Yes.
Casting down reasonings and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God.
Yes.
Bringing every thought into the captivity of the obedience of Christ.
Yes.
And when I'm faced with a situation like that,
yes,
I say this verse until that situation is
goes away.
Gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
You bring it into captivity.
I bring it into captivity.
You're arrested.
Yeah.
You no longer have freedom in my mind.
Anything that is not conducive to the love of God, I use the scripture.
Yes, yes.
And I say it until it's gone from me completely.
Yes, you are arrested.
Yeah.
No longer will you have any freedom in my life. Amen. Yes. Number 10?
Yes. Number 10 is love does not delight in evil. So this is totally opposite to love.
Yes.
If you delight in hurting people and wanting bad things for them, it's just not showing love at all.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Does not delight in evil. So not only that, you know, in the sense that we may not be the ones doing the evil, but we are admiring someone else who is, we're delighting in, we're seeing someone who is not doing God's will. And we are not in any way, angered, so to speak, by it. We will even join in the person's behavior. So, you know, for example, certain laws are being passed in our country. Cannot be characterized as anything but evil. Transgender, where you're now going to change a woman into being a man or a man into being a woman, and you're now going to say, therefore, these men can go into the women's bathroom. No, somebody say, oh, you're talking politics in church. I am speaking God's word. God made man, God made woman. A man or a woman has no right now to go and redefine who they are. It's evil. Yes?
Before all these things that's happening,
yes, yes,
we cannot be going ho ho ho. We know these things have to happen.
That's right.
Must happen.
Are we not going to be angered by them?
You are.
Okay, that's the point we're making. The point we're making. No, I take your point. You know, I take your point, but I do not want that point to seemingly say, therefore, we must ignore it because it must happen. No. We're not at odds. We are agreeing.
Because we know that for the scriptures to be fulfilled,
yes,
it has.
We agree. We agree. Do we agree? Yes. Now, we agree. These things must happen. The Bible tells us that the end will not come unless these things happen. We agree. Does that mean we must embrace them?
No.
No, 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 no. No, I'm not saying you are, but is it something that we should be angered at?
Yes.
We are to be angered at it. That's the point we are making. The point we are making is, I get your point, you know, but what I don't want to do, we understand that point. That point is something that we all know. These things must happen. Even the, you know, what is it, 2 Timothy 3 tells us, you know, but notice this. Take note of this in the last days, and it tells you the heart of men, and all these in the last days. We know that. Jesus tells us, you know, these things are going to happen before the end comes. We know that. How does he want you as his child to relate to it? Are we going to say, okay, these things must happen, so let me therefore join in the vote?
We go out and preach the gospel and let you cry aloud. Of course,
yes.
You cry aloud, preach the gospel, and we know that these things will happen. So it's like, don't be surprised.
No, we're not surprised,
but we're
angered. The word here is angered. Not surprised.
I don't even know if that is the right word. Because if God says that these things will happen, and he's God and he knew they would happen, we have to say, well, they will happen. We know they will happen.
So,
we empathize.
So how should we relate to it then?
You know, we should give them sympathy.
Okay, so we should sympathize with it.
When I say sympathy.
Well, let's talk about that. How many persons feel that way? Should we be sympathizing? Because what sympathy means, sympathy is a way of really, in a sense, tacitly, supporting the view. You know, yes, let me hear you.
Did you want to say what you just said to me?
Oh. As what Sister Rose was saying, like,
yes,
when we see these things, we know they are supposed to happen, so
yes.
I don't think we should be angry at them.
Yes.
All we should do is to look into ourselves and see we are at with Christ, because we know that, you know, the coming is at hand, and these are the things that help us to, you know, get closer to God.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Good.
If I could add to what you just said,
yes.
I think that I'm trying to understand what Sister Rose is saying.
Yes.
And I think I kind of see what you mean, because I think if we get angered, it could hurt us, because every single angry thought is going to be hurting our body.
Yes.
It says that we are living in living in a world which is Satan's world, and
yes,
we're aware that we're living in a fallen world.
Yes.
Because we're living in a fallen world, it should make us sigh,
yes,
and it should make us look up, but I don't think it should make us angry.
Yes.
Just because if we're going to be angry about it,
yes,
we're going to end up losing our peace.
Yes.
So in my mind, what we need to do is to focus our focus on God even more.
All right. I take your point, and I get the point.
That's what I think
where
she's
saying,
trying to say.
Maybe what you're saying is, rather than the word angry, you say you're sad.
The point is,
you're sad. Is that what you're saying?
Just a moment. I want to tell you. Like in Canada and all like that, it's the government who gets into these things that sometimes, you know, you could be angry that they are so corrupt they can see beyond.
Yes.
But when these human beings are getting there, that the enemy, he's bringing them to say, oh, you're not okay, you want to be something else. It's all the enemy.
Yes.
The enemy that's controlling this world. And
yes,
we have to decide, how are we go? You have to stand strong against the
yes
enemy.
Okay, I'm going to make a point after, but someone else wants to make a point. Yes.
So what I would say in terms of anger, in my opinion, anger isn't necessarily a negative thing. It's all a matter of how it's channeled. You can actually use anger in a motivating way.
Yes.
If you look at even, there are numerous biblical accounts, particularly in the Old Testament, when our very creator, God himself, was angry numerous times.
So
anger in general isn't a bad thing. Now, back to the discussion in terms of, you know, when we see things happening in the world and we know these things were prophesied and are going to happen. I mean, for me personally, when I hear about a pregnant woman getting shot and killed, that angers me. I get angry. When I hear about children getting, you know, kidnapped and women getting raped and those kind of things, those things do anger me. And how I react to that, you know, I pray, you know, as we're commanded to do. I pray for the world and I pray for peace. I pray thy kingdom come. It's just all a matter of, I mean, obviously anger can be a negative emotion. It just really depends on how we choose to channel it and how we choose to use it. But we do have to obviously understand, and of course, and as you said, we all acknowledge these things are going to happen and they are going to take place.
Right.
But it's okay to have it affect us in an emotional way.
Very good.
That's a point.
So I do appreciate and accept the point that Sister Rose is making. And at the same time, I want us to get the balance, because the point you made, you know, when these things are happening in the earth, for example, as was happening in the days of Noah, and it angered the Lord, or it was happening, you know, in Sodom and Gomorrah, and it angered the Lord, it doesn't mean that God was sinning. It doesn't mean that he was, you know, and that really is the attitude. If the word, I like a word that was used there, which was, I repeat it, which was, we are deeply sorrowed. You know, there's a deep sorrow in our heart about a matter that is happening. It is in a sense the kind of condition, you know, when we talk about anger, you know, so let's leave it there, because that is the tone of what is meant by saying, you know, it angers me, you know, I'm deeply disturbed by this development that is happening. Okay, let's.
I think what happened was, I think males probably feel anger when, I think there's something about the brain.
Yes.
When a woman would say she feels sad,
yes,
man would say she's angry.
Yes.
And I think it's a choice.
Yeah, there is a slight thing there. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Right. And I just want us to, blend it to understand that. Yeah, we're probably saying the same thing. Yes, yes, very good. Let's go quickly. Number 11. We have just.
Just briefly.
No, please, brother. Can I take the next one? Can I, please? I just want. We just have. 10 minutes to go. Yes.
Love rejoices with the truth.
Yes.
Love is one of God's inseparable qualities.
Yes.
And it is very important as Christians, we are truthful, not only to our fellow brethren, but in the workplace.
Yes.
For example, you might apply for a job.
Yes.
And you know, when you're writing your resume, you pack it up with a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And then, you know, maybe the manager might say, oh, I see where you have experience in XYZ.
Yes.
And then they ask you to do something.
Yes.
And then cannot able to. So if you're not being truthful, it can put us to shame.
Yes.
And it also helps us in our relationships, in our marriages.
Yes.
If we are truthful, it helps us to make decisions.
Yes.
And have a peaceful relationship.
Wonderful. Yes. Excellent. You know, if we love truth, truth will bring us joy, and that's the point. You know, it you rejoice in God's word, in the truth. The truth may offend, but we should still love the truth. Why? Because we know that this is what ultimately will bring good, you know, for ourselves. This is ultimately what pleases God. And so sometimes the truth, as you know, creates offense, but we need to be able to love it, and even if it goes against ourselves, we need to be able to love and to rejoice in what is true. Let's go quickly. We have just a few more minutes. Number 12, I think. Yes.
Love always protects.
Love always protects. Yes. What do you understand?
Like a husband protects his wife and children in case of disaster. Yes. It's a protection. He puts protection around them.
If I love you, I will protect you.
Yeah.
Yes. And because of love, we will want to be sort of a vanguard. So protecting is not only just an individual here. But because we love God, we protect His Word. So sometimes when you stick for what God says, it's because of that love in your heart for God and for His Word. You are going to say no. You're going to, as Sister Yusuf was saying earlier, you bring everything into captivity, all strongholds. That's anything that sets up itself against God. You're going to, you know, tear it down and bring it into captivity. So we have that sort of an attitude. So love sometimes is not really just the nice, good feeling. Love, in many instances, offends. We have to know that. But you know what? Some people call it tough love. Where you really love, but you have to go for what is true. And therefore, the fact that I'm doing what is true, and I said, you were wrong. You know, you say, it's because I don't like you. That's not the point. We have to be able to stand with what is true. And on every side, we should be able to do that. That's maturity. Unless we're mature, we can't do those things. It takes a mature person to do that kind of a thing. Not easy.
Just your point on love. Sometimes our human love causes us to look away when people are actually doing wrong because of that love.
Yes.
So,
yeah. But say that again. Your human love will cause you to look away when someone is doing wrong. So what are we saying? We're saying that yes? Are we enabling the person?
I think because of the strong emotion, I would say it's a human.
Yes, yes, I understand your point. But
it causes us to, you know, say our kids are behaving better, whatever.
Yes.
We just ignore it because we.
So do we love the person? When we do that?
In reality, we don't.
Right. The outworking of that is that we're not showing love towards a person because we know it is not good for the person. And even if I have to lose my friendship, but I'm standing up for what is good for you, I ought to do that.
And then that comes back to being truthful.
And that comes back to being truthful. Yes. So you see how it intertwines? And the verse, let's move on to number 14. Quickly, I want to...
13.
Oh, you... 13? Really? Number 13.
Love always trusts.
Yes. Let's hear that.
When we have love,
yes,
and I mean the love of God,
yes,
because if we have the love of man, we will not always trust. But when we have God's love, we will have trust. And with regards to what Brother Godfrey said earlier,
yes,
like if somebody is doing something wrong and you, yes, like sidestep it, that is not love. I always said to people, or to my brethren, that if I'm doing something wrong, right, don't be afraid to tell me. Don't think you're going to offend me. I offend myself. I'm mad at myself because I'm the one who does the wrong. But I know you love me and you try to pull me out of the hole. If you don't tell me I'm wrong, you're pushing me down, right?
Yeah.
So we need
so you
to
trust the person.
Yeah.
So when you really love, you extend trust.
Yes.
Towards a person.
Yes.
So is there a case in
you
which
you have to be truthful?
Yes.
Right? Because
yes.
even like in like some people with relationship, or some people say there's no love, nobody in love again, no love, not there again, right?
Yes.
And I don't trust no one. But if you don't trust yourself, how can you trust another person?
Yes.
You have to first trust yourself before you can
yes.
trust someone.
Yes.
Because
yes.
what you think you would do, you think the person would do the same thing, right?
Yes.
So if you think you're gonna do something wrong,
yes.
or if I say
yes.
I'm going here,
yes.
and no, if you say you're going somewhere and you trust, that mean I will do the same. I say I go there and not going there.
Yes.
So we have to first trust ourselves to know that if we say we're going to do
something,
it, not the opposite. So
yes,
then when
yes.
a person tells us something,
yes.
then we believe in it.
Yes.
And if the person want to go the opposite,
yes.
then that's their business.
Yes.
But we first have to trust ourselves.
Yeah, very good. You know, that's one of the more difficult ones, to say love always trusts.
Can I add something to
yes,
that
please.
One?
Yes, go right ahead.
When I think of it as saying love always trusts.
Yes.
I'm thinking it means love always trusts in God.
Okay.
Because we know that the arm of flesh will fail us.
Yes, yes.
In our relationships with one another, we let one another down.
Yes.
It's just like a chair. You would sit on this chair, it
yes.
falls.
Yes.
I'm not always going to want to trust to sit
yes.
in that
yes.
chair.
Yes.
But if I trust in God to say, well, look, it is in you whom I put my trust.
Yes.
So if I even have to sit on this chair that fell down with me,
yes.
I am trusting you, God, that...
Yes.
You will direct me that if even if I sit on this chair that's
yes.
broken down with me before,
yes.
you will uphold me
yes.
on this chair. So
yes.
even in our relationships
yes.
with others, that others have let us down, and,
yes.
and it talks about us giving
the benefit.
That, yeah, giving
the
others
benefit.
The benefit of
yes.
the doubt.
Yes. Yes.
So you can,
yes.
even
yes.
somebody has hurt you, you can say, you know what, Father, my life is in your hands.
Yes.
I know this person
yes.
has done
yes.
me harm before,
yes. Yes. Yes.
but I'm trusting you
yes.
that you will so protect me that
yes.
even if this person
yes.
mean to do me harm, you can turn that around for our good and to
yes.
your honor and glory.
Very good.
So I think
very
the
good.
Always trust is always trust in God.
That's right. That's right. It begins there. It begins there. In other words, the trust I'm going to invest in you comes, it results from my trust in God. And it is not trusting in the person, because really, the Bible tells us, as you said, that, you know, the person, the human heart is deceitful above all things. Who can know it? So how can you trust in that way? But because of God, my trust in God, I am going to lay myself bare, you know, where I may get hurt, but I will nonetheless go ahead and do it. That's very, very good. Okay, I'm
number
just,
14.
Yes.
I don't need to say much. All I need to say is everybody's spoken about it already, because it's love always hopes,
yes.
and it ties into love always trusts.
Yes.
Because the hoping is like it keeps our head covered, just like that armor. Where
yes.
it says the helmet of the have
yes.
the helmet
yes.
of the hope of salvation.
Yes.
When I think about again about this, love always hopes.
Yes.
It's pretty much what we've been talking about in terms
yes.
of love. Love always trusts.
Yes.
Your
yes.
mind is in a positive frame. Whatever things are true and lovely, and it's not going to be thinking any evil.
Yes.
It's going to be. It's all tied up.
Right. Very
so
good.
I don't have
very
much to say.
No, that's right. And you're spot on. We have 3 minutes to go. 3 minutes. And the number 15.
Okay. What I have is love always perseveres.
Yes.
And when I think of it, it's like having a goal. And no matter what obstacles, if you're not back, you pick yourself up.
Yes.
Because that's your goal, so you're persevering towards that goal.
Yes.
And I think it's a characteristic that God is looking for.
Yes.
And I found something in Revelation 3:10. It says, because you have kept my commandment to persevere, I will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall
yes.
come upon the whole world.
Yes, very good. And persevere, you know, think about a mother and a child. And think about the condition and the in which a child is. Where, you know, it's almost as though the child may not have a chance to live. The doctor might have written off the child and given the mother all the negative reasons why, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, this is a concluded matter. And that mother, nonetheless, under all circumstances, no matter if it is to lose personal sleep, if it is to lose resources, if it is to lose your job, if it is to lose you know because of your love for your child, you are going to continue to work at it. I hear what you say, doctor. I know you are the expert, but you know what? I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep working at it. Let it happen, doctor. But I'm going to continue to do it. And you know, that sort of a heart towards others, we are because of our love for each other. You know, the church may be going through many issues. And, you know, rather than just walking out, you say, you know what? I know that this is God's church. And I know that Satan has his role in it. And you know what? I'm not going to just walk out like that. I am going to stay in despite the fact that I'm not comfortable. And I am going to do the things that can help because other people are being affected. I'm not the only one being affected. So I'm going to use whatever little blessing that God has given me to help to make things better that everybody can go on. I am going to persevere in the faith unto the end, no matter what is happening. Because I know God's promise is true. I know that in the end, He will reward me. I know that God has spoken to me. I know He has called me. I have felt the acts of God in my life. And for that reason, there is nothing that is going to happen. I'm going to stay with it. You see, this marriage, although it is tearing down and it's going on like this, I am going to stay with it. I'm going to work through it. I'm going to bear the pain like Christ bore the pain for us. In order that we can be free and stay and make it work through until it works on. All the various things because of the love. And I'm going to do it because I know this is what God wants me to do. But as Brother Ken said, you know where all these things come from? It says the love of God, God has shed abroad in our hearts, His love. It is really not our love. It's really God's love. It's only when it is God's love. If the love we have is because it is our decision to love, it ain't gonna work because we can make a decision not to love. But when it is a love that God has planted in our heart and the soil is there and it is like a plant growing and it's being watered by the word, it's gonna continue to blossom and grow and grow. And what we want to do as the people of God is to demonstrate the maturity, is to demonstrate the growth, is to go against the grains, that when it looks like this is the only way to go downstream, I'm nonetheless going to turn around and put my head upstream and swim against the waves, go against the grains because of my love for God. Unless we can find that resolve in our hearts, unless we can have that conviction deep down, unless we can know this where we are with blinkers going towards the goal, we're going to be distracted. We're going to find ourselves falling by the way. We're going to find ourselves like everybody else. I can't afford to be like everybody else. You can't afford to be like everybody else. We're going to have to make up our minds, even now, to say, you know what? Trouble is going to come. If it don't come already, it's going to come anyhow. Let me brace and let me be prepared and let me be ready. Because ultimately, I know God, it is all about God. God is going to reward me. So let us make a resolve. It's a few of us here, but you know what? It takes a few strong. Sometimes they say one person can make a difference. You can make that difference. When a brother or a sister is feeling pain, when the brother or sister offends you, you can heal that brother by not responding in like way, like manner, and with a love. Yes? Encouragement, yes. Let us encourage one another as we see the day appearing.